We would like to advise that the following program may contain adult themes, occasional nudity, and language that may offend some listeners.
Thank God it's...
Welcome to the Lindley Evans Music Studio at the ABC in Ultimo for Thank God It's Friday. I'm Richard Glover, and this week with the music, it's the wonderful Abby Dobson and friends. And our panel, Ben Jenkins, Jennifer Wong and Tommy Dean. And our audience this week, drawn from Wollongong, Armidale, the Gold Coast, Gosford, Wentworth, Falls and Ulla Dulla. But first, as always, here is the news from nowhere. It may be hard to enlist your sympathy on this particular subject, but I'm facing the most terrible of problems. I don't know what to do with the family silver. I have a shoebox full of the stuff, beautiful silver knives, forks and spoons, none of them used for years. And the trouble is, Jocasta has banned their use, as each fork and spoon and knife is inscribed with an elaborate letter G for Glover. Now, Jocasta says they are indicative of my family's taste. Like the dark sideboard and the grandfather clock, they are part of a style that Jocasta despises. She calls it my mother's, "Didn't you know I was a duchess look?" Says Jocasta, "You may have been born with a silver spoon in your mouth, but I wasn't. I'm not about to sit up at the kitchen table slurping down my soup with a spoon that drips pretension." Fair call. On the other hand, it's free cutlery, and what's the point of having it sit in a cupboard? More to the point, once I start sorting through the items, I discover it's not even solid silver. It's silver plate. You see? I say to Jocasta defiantly, "I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I was born with a silver-plated spoon in my mouth. Quite different, I think you'll find." Now, Jocasta grew up in Parramatta during its Angela's Ashes period. Hear her talk and you'd assume she'd attended school barefoot with a pet ferret down at the front of her jumper. On this occasion, she confines herself to a simple observation. "You better not imagine I'm going to sit around with a bottle of Silvo getting the muck off your mother's sad attempt at a family crest." Again, fair call. I do remember at some point in the distant past tackling some object with Silvo. Remember Silvo? Slurping this white gunk onto a piece of cloth and scrubbing away like a scene from Downton Abbey. So maybe Jocasta is correct. The silver cutlery should go. Years ago, I sold off my mother's grandfather clock and the dark sideboard. Maybe I could find a taker for the knives and forks. Hopefully some pretentious tryhard whose name happens to start with the letter G. But suddenly, I have an inspiration. I shall check out the internet using the search term, "how to clean silver." I rapidly discover that Silvo is old hat. A new method has come to the fore, and everyone uses it. There are variations, but they all include aluminium foil and baking soda. You line the kitchen sink with foil, shiny side up, and then add the cutlery and a cup of baking soda. And apparently a chemical reaction occurs once you add some water. Now, I know people say don't trust things you find on the internet, but what's the worst that can happen? I lift the blackened cutlery into the sink, and I think about the world of which it was a part. This strange world in which people had things for best. A set of cutlery for best. A set of plates for best. A set of wine glasses for best. A whole front room for best. All of it never, ever used. All of it just for show. It was madness. These were the treasured possessions of a whole generation. A generation that had seen the Depression and then the war. My parents started out poorer, if the truth be told, than Jocasta's parents. This set of silver-plated knives and forks represented an escape from hunger and desperation. Same with the silver candle snuffers, the doilies on the French polished hall table, the grand marble ashtrays and the placemats showing English castles. It was all pretentious and ridiculous, and at the same time it was a triumph of overcoming an aspiration. I sprinkled the baking soda into the sink, covering the cutlery with a layer of white. I turn on the tap and add a few litres of water. It's like a science experiment. The soda fizzes and crackles, fumes fill the air, leaving me coughing and then just as quickly clear. The effect is instantaneous. The tarnish has left the silver-plated metal and somehow adhered to the aluminium foil, leaving the cutlery sparkling as if new. The knives and forks look the same as they might have in 1948, when my mother, off to a life in Papua New Guinea, would have purchased them in Sydney with the ambition of impressing the expats of Port Moresby. I rinse and dry the lot before presenting one shining example to Jocasta. Rather elegant, don't you think? Actually, she says, it does look rather nice. Let's use them from now on. But if anyone asks, the G stands for grub, since grub is what you eat when you're using them. You can take the girl out of Parramatta. And that's the news from nowhere. We have Ben Jenkins, Jennifer Wong, Tommy Dean. None of them come from families which would have family
that's
silver.
Not true. No, that was hilarious. We, for years and years and years, we always had Christmas and Thanksgiving at my grandmother's house. And we always ate from, they had the best. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only time we used the china plates, it's set in the sideboard.
They brought them out once a year?
Brought them out once, well, twice, like Thanksgiving and Christmas. Mm-hmm. And the silver had the initials R-L?
Mm-hmm.
R-L? It's L. L is our my proper last name. That's a long story. But regardless, hello, ATO. But nobody.
Is Tommy Langoustine.
Yeah, but nobody in the family was named with an R.
Was it for right and left?
That's what we thought. That's what we thought. That was quite often a good. But for years, nobody even thought to ask at all. And finally, somebody did say, "Well, wait a minute, Grandma, where's RL?" Oh no, your grandfather stole him from the church. That was our fantasy silver.
Very good. Let us check you up with this week's news. Who had to temper their sense of justice. Who had to temper their sense of justice?
This was the Commonwealth Bank gentleman, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was
Matt Common. He's basically called Matt Combank.
Yeah, there's a bit of nominative determinism for you.
Well, is Westpac managed by Barry Westpac? I mean,
but no, it was this awful kind of corporate doublespeak, wasn't it? When he got the gig, or when he was told to look into various sort of breaches at the bank mm-hmm. it had. What was it? It was.
Well, they were doing naughty stuff. Basically, yeah. They were selling people insurance that they didn't need.
Temper your sense of justice. I love that corporate doublespeak. I think we should start calling bank robberies enhanced withdrawals. Yeah, it's been incredible, hasn't it?
What's your PIN number? Colt 44.
Have you guys been following the commission at all?
It just seems to be getting worse and worse, to the point where I think CBA will have to change the kids' banking stream from Dolomite to Dolomite not to Dollar absolutely no more. When people start to do this, it's kind of like I don't know how much more you could, as a bank, be doing the wrong thing.
Yeah,
you know, like
they're charging dead people for a start.
Yeah, for advice. And just the beautiful story I think about. Well, I'd like to see it as a morality tale of how to stand up for yourself. You know, if you happen to be a director of a bank and they ask you to give back 40% of your director's fee, did you know you can tell them to get lost? Isn't that an incredible
tale? Well, this is the other
story.
The former chairman, because such a lot had happened on his watch, say the other members of the board say, why don't you give back? Give back 40%. No, he said. So, you know, let me think about it. No.
Yeah. Well, the important thing is they tried.
But I see his point. Well, I wouldn't cover it. That wouldn't begin to cover it. Even if you took 100% of my fee, it wouldn't be nearly what we stole from the people. So why bother?
He probably didn't want to take the money out because the fees would be so much.
But it's difficult. I understand the difficulty of the in some sense, you know, it's a story of peer pressure. You know, this guy wants to do his job. He's like, well, maybe we should clean up the things. And they're like, well, you know, if we do, then we don't make the money.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I used to work for a pizza delivery company. very similar. And they had a brand new small family company, and they put out flyers, as you do, to generate business. But on the flyer was a $2 off a pizza. But the drivers very quickly worked out that since we were the ones handing out the flyers, we in effect had $2 bills in our pockets. So every time we delivered a pizza, if you just brought it back with a flyer you didn't deliver, it was as if a coupon had been redeemed.
Which means you got the $2.
Which means you got the $2.
I would love to see a royal commission into pizza fraud.
Yeah.
Tommy sitting on the stand being grilled by Rowena Orr, sweating.
This is what I mean, because, you know, like, let's say hypothetically a young Tommy Dean didn't see the morality and may have cashed in a few flyers.
Sure.
Because he realized the loophole.
Well, you were just in for your slice.
Just in for my slice. But then imagine my surprise when eventually I worked out that the owners might eventually work it out, and I explained the scam to them, and I got a financial windfall as a bonus for saving them all the money the drivers may have hypothetically stolen from them.
You absolute rat.
I'm just saying... My point is, the director should have turned in some people and then kept his bonus. That's what he should have done.
Yeah. Or told you to temper your sense of justice.
Yeah, exactly. I had another job where the first thing the salesman taught you at an RV place was they taught you how to manipulate...
RV?
Recreational vehicles, camper vans.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we just sold pieces for camper vans. But the gas, the natural gas that you pump into the tanks was unmonitored. So we were allowed to sell that, and there was a way to manipulate the handwritten sales receipts so that you could just steal the money. Right?
I'm saying it. Royal commission to Tommy Dean right
now.
I'm calling it. We get bipartisan support on this. We can push it through for 2019.
I used it to support children in Rwanda. My question is...
This is going international now.
Or was I Robin Hood?
Yeah.
I was Robin Hood.
You were stealing. Now... Who says you are not leading when you are just following? Who says this?
See, this is a story that is made... I agree. Well, sorry. The story is that Malcolm Turnbull, it turns out...
Remember him? He was the primary bear. Thanks. Bell. Yeah, good.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the one before the one... I can't remember. Yeah.
Can I, just quietly, I rarely toot my own horn. But... I couldn't be more excited. Malcolm Turnbull was on Q&A.
Yep.
He was on a by himself episode of Q&A. And before the show, I do the warm-up for the show, I said to the crowd, I said, look, this is quite embarrassing to be out here, but I know you're all here because you came to see Malcolm Turnbull this evening, but there has been a slight coup in the green room. And tonight's guest will actually be Michelle Guthrie. And hilariously, no one laughed. It made me sad that the Q&A audience didn't get my brilliant joke. I never write jokes for that show.
That's the TGIF audience.
The TGIF hey! Straight off the bat.
Anyway, back.
What's
the story?
Is
the
it a tweet
story?
Or a
Instagram, actually.
It's an Instagram account that is making fun of and or mocking Tony Abbott. And he follows it. Which he should, just to be up on the news. Who doesn't follow Instagram accounts that make fun of Tony Abbott?
Well, this Instagram account is trying to unseat Tony Abbott, and the idea is that maybe Mr. Turnbull is showing a bit too much anxiety in following it.
But that's the thing. I think people really that want to try to make a case for overstating it. Like doesn't mean like. Follow doesn't mean follow. These are just social media norms that we just do. Quite often when I like something on Facebook, it's really just me saying to the person who put it up, I saw it. That's really what like says. I saw it. But the only things I like are things my relatives put up. Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. They just know that I saw it. Tommy Dean acknowledges that you put a picture up.
And to be fair to Tony Abbott, he was quite funny about it. He said, no, I'm sure he's just following it so he can better help me hang on to the seat.
And that's the right answer. But that stuff is nonsense. It's nonsense to make any sort of argument that by touching a button, you've somehow... Complicit.
I mean, some people are, you know, the Roseville branch of the Liberal Party are trying to throw Turnbull out of the party.
Yeah, a very powerful branch of the Roseville branch. Don't cross the Roseville branch.
Yeah.
I find it interesting. As Tommy says, a like doesn't necessarily mean a like. I mean, I was thinking about this today and going through my own Instagram and seeing if there's anything that I like on there that that I don't agree with wholeheartedly. And I came across an account that shows pictures of cats wearing business attire. Mm. And I'd actually die for that. So I actually do believe wholeheartedly in everything I follow.
Jim Wong, does a follow mean a follow?
A follow means that you want to keep an eye on someone, but I love the language that Malcolm Turnbull used to kind of, you know, shed some light on what he's doing here. He said on Twitter that following doesn't imply endorsement, simply that you are, for whatever reason, currently interested in seeing the followed person's posts in your feed. Emphasis may be mine. But
miss his beautiful language.
You know, just for whatever reason. He didn't name the reasons, of which there are many. He didn't list them. I think it's a real gentleman's move to just leave it just so openly. For whatever reason. For whatever reason.
Let me ask you one last question for this week's news. Who enjoyed a visit from the Outback this week?
That was every member of this great city of ours.
Yeah.
The dust that blew in. I loved that. I thought it was so good to see all the four-wheel drives in Mossman looking like they belonged. That was pretty good.
Because normally they have to go to a special reverse car wash to get that look.
Exactly. Yeah. This is done at Forum and people walking around with RMs like they do. Yeah, it was a real, real great afternoon.
Yeah, you know the people in the Akubras and the Dryers of Bones, they come from this little tiny place called Paddington.
I found it disturbing. It is weird when this happens. I remember 2009 when it went, you know, same thing. And, man, it just lifts up so much dirt. It's amazing to know how the world works in such minute ways. What I find curious, though, is that my entire backyard now is a crop of wheat. And I don't know how to bring it in. Yeah.
And they want their topsoil back, Tommy.
I want them to have it.
Yeah, all of Broken Hill paying Sydney a visit. We have Ben Jenkins, Jennifer Wong, Tommy Dean, and our wonderful audience. Thank you for coming. Thank God it's Friday. Now, Donald Trump was this week asked how he would rate himself compared to the great American presidents such as Lincoln, Washington and FDR, to which he replied, this is true, he said, look, I hate to do it, but I will. I would give myself an A+. Hey, come here, Donald. Since it is report card time, can you rate yourself in various aspects of your life and then Trump style? Calculate an all-over score. Jen Wong.
I can do this, yes, but with some hesitation. I am working through a few issues at the moment with my avoidant behaviour. Mm-hmm. So I guess the report card that I would write for myself, if I got around to it, would be that Jennifer has been taking active steps to avoid the avoidant behaviour. And by actively avoiding avoidance, she shows great promise for eventually doing very little, which is better than avoiding a lot. She should be congratulated on her continued efforts to step back from the avoidance. And in terms of a score like Donald Trump, and I think it's also fair to point out here that, of course, the man who believes in false news also believes in false modesty. I have decided not to score her efforts based on doubts that she will never get around to reading this.
Hey. Tommy Dean, how do you... You know, the president of your people gives himself an A+. What do you give yourself?
Yeah, he's been saying that from the beginning, you know. There's been hardly any president in the history of presidents that have done more for better than him. It's great.
Did you know what he said he was thankful for Thanksgiving?
Himself?
Yes. It's like a joke. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
If you only see yourself.
Who's the turkey is the question.
Well, that's where he pardoned himself. At the big, what? There's a bird? What? I was thinking about this because I don't know if you've watched the excellent sitcom on Netflix, The Good Place.
Yeah.
But their most recent episode was about this very thing.
Because this is about people who go to heaven, isn't it?
I don't want to spoil it for anyone if you come in on it, but let's just say there is a place.
Richard.
Which is good.
It's good. But it talks about different philosophies, but at the moment right now, the latest episode was just talking about, you know, this idea of utilitarianism, where you only do good things for the sake of doing good things. And how do you score that? Because, you know, that's the whole idea that, you know, to get to the good place, you're going to have to score a great deal of points. So I'm not sure what we need to actually grade. My dad said the only thing that matters is to be nice to people. I believe that I'm unfailingly nice. On my niceness scale, I would give myself 94%.
But what about when you're stealing from campervan operators?
Well, is this a lifetime rule or? I assumed financial year for this question. Since July 1st, 94%. 93 now.
Does that
I
mean
had thoughts about what I just
does that mean the pizza was still happening up till June 30th of 2018?
We've got to have a side hustle.
You know, housework is a big thing. Husbands aren't known for doing the housework. I contribute what I consider to be a fair share. Yeah. I have a very different definition of fair than my wife. But I also believe the word share, we share a similar definition, and I would give myself 84%.
Okay, that's great. How much?
That's for the one room that I clean. So we're clear. She would give me 47% on the house, but I don't know why it's called housework when I clearly clean the back of the kitchen. That's what I do. I think it's about generosity of spirit, in that I would give myself a solid 75. I do maintain a certain selfishness at times for things that I like. I think in my general outpouring...
How do you mean a certain selfishness? You spend most of every day playing computer games and board games and not doing anything.
Do you? But understand, the reason I play computer games is because those electronic avatars need to get from where they are to where they need to be. And without me getting them across the
very
land...
Very good point. It's a very good
save
point.
Save the dragon.
Yeah, I mean, these games don't play themselves.
They do not play
themselves.
Except
they kind of
do.
Yeah.
They do
yeah.
not.
Wow.
He would still be sitting in the tavern talking to a wizard about the quest to come.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Thanks to me.
We will be taking a collection for Tommy's wife after the program.
I also am an excellent cook, so in the cooking stakes, I'm going to give myself 98%.
Yeah, that's true.
If you like things with gravy and sugar.
Which we all do.
Yeah. So overall, I'm going to give my life in general, I'm going to, A plus is too much. I'm going to give it a 91. I'm going to give it a solid A. Mm-hmm. Pure A.
Solid A. So, right. Ben, how do you rate yourself?
Well, I had to give this some thought just now, as you said it, which was uncomfortable, because this year, this financial year even, if we're going from Tommy's thing, just thinking recently, I've had two television shows cancelled. I accidentally called my wife by the wrong name a week ago.
Whoa!
And this morning, I literally almost perished choking on a piece of toast. So,
which she had jammed in your throat.
Yeah. So, if we're going by Trump scale, that's a high distinction, surely. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Seriously, though, thinking about this, we have our first kid coming in about a month. And that, yeah. I feel
Who's the mother?
And I feel like that just evens out everything else. I feel like that counts for a billion. Yeah. So feeling quite chipper about prospects.
Because you've sort of given the world the generosity of spirit of a child.
Well, exactly. And that child is half my wife, who's great. And the other half, that's me, that's fine, we can deal with that. But, like, yeah, I feel like everything's coming up.
How can you get your wife's name
wrong?
Well,
to be fair to Ben, his wife's name is insert name here.
It's Polish.
It's hard to remember, yeah.
I don't know, I was reading a book, and I look and I called her the name from the book.
Yeah.
I'm not a smart man, Richard. Life, it's hard
it to... It just... Tiffany seems unlikely.
It's hard enough putting one word in front of another that the sentence makes
okay,
sense.
Okay, final score, what is it?
Oh, I'm giving, what's a high distinction, above 90?
Yeah.
92.
Yeah?
Yeah.
92.
And oh, you think you're 1% better than me?
Yes. I've often said that.
Fight. Are you ready for the Wheel of Death, ladies and gentlemen? Every week our audience brings in these weird, random topics. Today's topic are black and white, wind, Black Friday, smart condoms.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bathroom scales, agenda, audience, cat. The audience is not very creative. Like, you ask the audience to give you a random name and they say audience.
It's a real say what you see situation.
Cat, schoolies, haircuts, silly season, maple syrup, Thanksgiving and sausage sizzles. Anyone fill you full of fear, Tommy?
Haircuts, clearly.
Yeah. Because he's never had one. Okay, round and round and round it goes. Where it stops, no one knows. Today's topic for Mr. Tommy Dean is Thanksgiving. What? Thanksgiving.
What?
Who gave him Thanksgiving? That's a bit easy, isn't it? Thanksgiving.
It does seem a bit easy, but also a gift. Thank you very much for that. I would like to give thanks for the topic that you gave me. It is on Thanksgiving when, a lot of people don't know this, but traditionally the families get together and put on their smart condoms. That's how we get through the meal. Sorry. We had to say it at least once. It's a glorious time. I think one of the great traditions of Thanksgiving from the American point of view is that, like a lot of countries that you may be aware of, we set aside the trueness of history and focus on what seems like a good thing. I think that's nice. I think that we should probably do that sometimes more. We gloss it over, but it's nice. We get together with the family. You bring all. It's all about family. The glory of Thanksgiving in America is it sets aside the foolishness of Christmas and the gifts and certain sort of, you know, needs. It's literally all about family. You always arrive. There's always one member of the family. In my case, it was my mother. And it's her job every year to host the dinner. And they do that out of the love they have for their family, out of the goodness of their heart. And in my mother's case, so she can spend the rest of the year going, can you believe that I had to do that for all of them? Can you believe it? Do they know how long it takes to put together that meal every year? Every year I've got to put the turkey in at 2 a.m. I got to get up at 2 a.m. to put the turkey in. Which is her way of saying I love them all so much. And she doesn't sleep very much, so to be fair, she had nothing to do at 2 a.m. She might as well be basting a turkey. You also set out your family fortunes. We traditionally had a turkey. We also had a ham. The ham was there to remind you that meat is nothing without maple syrup and more sugar poured on top of it. It was glorious. It feels to me like we should feed the pigs maple syrup. It would just be a shorter... Oh, and marshmallows. A lot of people don't realize this. So we take sweet potatoes, and we put those in a pan, and then we dot it with butter and marshmallows. I know you're thinking that's crazy, but to be fair, it's tiny marshmallows. It's the tiny ones, but we make sure the entire top is covered. Sweet potatoes, because sweet potatoes in nature are not sweet enough. That I don't know what you have here, but American sweet potatoes are only sweet. That's why we add the marshmallows. Have you ever had it? I feel like you've never had it. Do you think that I'm making this up?
No, okay, so we're clear. I've heard about it, but it does sound disgusting.
It is completely disgusting. But not as it stands as testament. The real disgusting is what's called green bean casserole. And that's where you take a kilo of green beans and you steam them for an hour until they're slightly mushy. And then you mix them with a can of cream of mushroom soup. I think we'll all believe the greatest can of soup, cream of mushroom. And you mix that with the beans and a couple of spices, mostly cayenne pepper. And then you cover it with crispy French onions that come from a can. And then you bake that for another hour so it all perfectly congeals together. And then you set that on the table until a time comes to throw it away. Nobody eats. My brother likes it. Clearly, the weird one. My brother, who's the Secret Service agent, so I don't know if that's telling.
This is true. My brother's a Secret Service agent,
so his ability to stomach the completely inedible is possibly why he does the job that he does. That is my guess. He guards a green bean casserole. In metaphorical terms. We have the cranberry sauce. You must have a cranberry sauce. Nobody makes cranberry sauce properly. It comes in a can. And the beauty of cranberry sauce, it's one of the few things that when it comes out of a can, looks exactly like it's still in a can. It is magic in its form. So it sits like an edible can in the center of the table, representing all of the food in the pantry of America. That's quite nice. A variety of roast vegetables, of course. And then we start eating about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We eat and we eat and we eat. And the reason, a lot of people think it's because Americans are gluttonous. But I think the reason we eat so much and for so long is because all of the family is there. And if you keep stuffing your mouth with food, you will not say things to members of your family that will come back to haunt you. But all the things you want to say to them. So every time you're about to say, and the thing about you, Uncle Harry, is turkey. And you know it's serious if somebody reaches for the casserole. Oh, they've got trouble. And then the pies come out. Pumpkin pie, which is a really lovely, it's my favorite pie in the world, because it is a slightly less sweet version of sweet potatoes with marshmallows. If you want to do things to gorge. We have pumpkin pie with whipped cream. Sometimes we have a pecan pie. And yeah, I said pecan. That's how we say it. And then we finish with a variety of light biscuits, as if that wasn't enough. And then we retire to the living room. The men tend to go to the living room and watch a football game. There's always gridiron played throughout the day. Traditionally, the Detroit Lions always play a professional football game. Then there are a couple of college football games where the men sit and digest and talk football. And the women clean up the kitchen because, I'm sure you know, that's what God intended. The men, to be fair, all say that we'll help at the kitchen as soon as the football is over. But since the football is not over until 9 p.m., it's not our fault the women are in a hurry. You women are always in a rush. We clear away all the dishes. The football game is over. We come back together. And at the end, we have aperitifs. We dole out all the food, gets put into a variety of takeaway containers that everyone takes away. And off they go into the night. Another glorious family gathering in the tradition of love. And we also go around the table and say one thing that we are thankful for. One thing. So in the spirit of that, I'd like to go down the panel. I am thankful for the ABC. Because even though they didn't...
Oh, you're just pandering!
No, no, I was looking at my career, and it's everything is associated with it. Almost all the shows I've been on, ABC, this radio show, ABC. And sure, they didn't invite me to be on the ad program where they talked about how much people love the ABC. And so that hurt a little bit. So this may be me, passive-aggressively, at a Thanksgiving dinner, talking about what a jerk the ABC is. And I had trouble again at the parking, getting in. I don't know why they don't know who I am down at the parking garage.
Hey, Tommy, have some turkey.
Oh. French trash roll for me.
Well, I'm thankful. I'm thankful I don't live in America after that.
But then it was all over. Like, yeah, you take your leftovers and you reholster your weapon and you go home.
Does he die, ladies and gentlemen? Does he die?
Of course.
No, he lives. Thank God it's Friday. We have Jennifer Wong, Tommy Dean, and Ben Jenkins, who's got a book coming out. Welcome to Story Club is a collection of all the stories that have been on Story Club at Giant Dwarf over the years that Ben and Zoe have been running what is a wonderful event. It's being launched Monday week, December 3, at Giant Dwarf.
Yes, and it's got some familiar ABC stories and from familiar ABC people. We've got Annabelle Krabs in there, James Valentine, and a young whippersnapper by the name of Richard Glover.
He's very good.
I think. He's very good.
He's very good.
It's interesting that this is coming up right after what I just said about how much I love the ABC.
Did you invite
the ABC and I?
Invite Tommy Dean at all?
I'm just starting to feel like maybe somebody didn't tell me about Story Club.
It feels like this stuff has been lost in the post somewhere. Yeah, you know how the post is.
They put a call in.
Now, can I say just quickly on marshmallows in foodstuffs they shouldn't be? I don't think Americans are alone in this. My auntie, every single Christmas, and I know she listens to this program, so I want to give her a shout out because I'm very thankful for her. She makes something called ambrosia salad, which is sort of shredded coconut, mandarin, and marshmallows, and then that gets put in a bowl, and then someone has the audacity to call it a salad. And she makes it every year, and I'm the only one who eats it, and she makes it for me.
Is it a dessert or a
main? No, it's in the main course. Wow. It's absurd. I told my wife about it, and she could not believe it. Uh-huh. But yeah, please, Auntie Liz, make it again. Yeah.
Ambrosia salad.
sometimes it has custard in it.
I have it with ham. It's really off.
Yeah. You can get diabetes just from looking at it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, a program on the ABC is focusing on the value of learning music as a youngster, saying it helps develop the brain. Have you seen it? It's a wonderful show. What attempts did you make to learn music and how did you go and did it develop your brain? Jennifer Wong.
Well, like the great 1990s philosopher and thinker Lisa Simpson, I played the saxophone. But it was a long path to get to that. It started when I was quite young and someone gave me a violin, but there were no strings attached. And that was followed by suggestions from my psychologist to take up percussion, but I had to let that go because of the overt symbolism. Pretty soon I took up piano, but I had a few troubles. I couldn't get over that because I couldn't grasp the key elements. So I tried the violin again. This time the horsehair stick was missing, so I had to bow out, if you will. And finally, it was suggested that I try something in the horn section, but unlike Donald Trump, I didn't want to sing it with me, folks. Blow my own trumpet.
Another pun run.
So she did do music, and it did have a very poor effect on her brain, obviously. Did you have a go, Ben?
I'm with you. I actually played the saxophone. I think it helped my parents.
We've got two saxophones.
Yeah. Was it alto, tenor, soprano? What are we talking here?
Alto and tenor.
Oh, double threat. I played the sax. I think it helped my parents' brain in terms of being able to filter out noise because you can't be subtle with it. It's not a subtle instrument. Uh-huh. But I remember because you know kids don't really know that they're bad at stuff because they're kids, and people tend to be quite nice to them because they're children. I remember we got a new bandmaster, and he sort of, I thought I was quite good at the sax, and he took me aside. We're going to have a concert in a couple of weeks, and he told me that if I wanted to, I could just mime along because there are other saxophones. And I said, oh, no, that's fine. I don't want to. I'm quite good. And he said, mime along. So that was quite a blow to my ego, but I would have played that for maybe 5 years. It's tell you what, it is quite impressive to play something for that long and still be bad at it. I think it's like,
bad.
You know, in Bridge or in 500 when you play Mazaire and you lose every hand and that's equally impressive.
Yeah.
I was quite good at not playing the saxophone.
You were playing Mazaire, musical Mazaire.
Yeah, musical Mazaire, exactly. Yeah. That was sort of, I did that for 5 years.
It is terrible, that moment when the choir master or that. I remember being the one child, I think my, you know, being a reader is because during choir practice, I was sent on my own to sit in the empty classroom for an hour. I had nothing else to do but to read.
Because you have to be quite bad to be told to be.
I was.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Because you know you're just one voice, and there's 50 others. So
one voice can wreck it.
As bad as 50 good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I managed it. Tommy, did you learn an instrument?
No. But the whole point, and the show is beautiful, by the way. I've been watching the show. It's a fantastic show. But the idea, of course, is the idea that music education really helps the brains develop and that people are better for it. But my father was very dedicated in his idea that, you know, intelligence was there to be grasped. And I know that because of his message to me every time. I remember when I was in third grade, I met a friend who played drums, and I came home and I said, Dad, can I learn to play the drums? And he said, don't be stupid. And then when I was in fifth grade, I said, oh, can I get a guitar? Thinking about a guitar, that sounds funny. Don't be stupid. And that message really stuck with me. My dad was like an inspiration. I didn't need music. So whenever I see music written on a page, all I see is, don't be stupid. And I've made it a lifetime good goal. Thank you, Dad.
Thank you, Dad.
What instrument should you play? My dad would say, you should play the radio.
Turn it on. Change stations.
There's no music. There was a piano. We always had a piano in the house because, like we're talking about, that was style. You weren't a house if you didn't have a piano in it. Don't touch it. You'll knock it out of tune.
You had a piano for best.
Yeah, we did play piano. And my grandmother played, I think it's called the, I want to say harpsichord, but that doesn't seem, it was very small, sort of harpy shaped, and it was plucked at, and then it had like funny buttons on it. Might be harpsichord. Maybe it was a harpsichord.
Alto harp.
Okay, sure.
If any audience in Sydney was going to be able to identify this instrument, it's a CGI.
It's an ABC audience.
That was the only music effort. My grandmother played, not grandmother, my aunt played bells. She had a bell choir where the whole choir, each person was a note, and then they played their bell.
Oh, yeah. You're
like a human xylophone.
Sure.
So that was, I got to be C sharp once in a show.
And then you got to not be stupid.
Not be stupid. Because the note came. I knew when to do it. Now, bong! That was good. But I can't remember why, but no, my dad really hated the idea of sound.
Well, sound out of you.
None of my three brothers and nobody.
Really?
No, there will be no instruments in this house.
And Tommy's father was armed at all times, so you had to listen to what he said. Who were the winners and losers of this week, Jennifer Wong?
The Leaning Tower of Pisa is my winner and loser.
Of course,
I never stop talking about this. It has steadied. It's no longer leaning 4 centimetres, which is a win, I'm inclined to say. But also, it's a loss.
The engineers have been working on trying to straighten it,
exactly.
And they're succeeding. Yeah.
That's right. But it's a loss for all the journalists who have been covering this for years because they've lost the angle, Richard.
Jennifer Wong!
You should see Richard's face.
And you should see Jennifer's face. She's so delighted with herself. It's pure Labrador joy that she gets out of these puns.
Who was the loser? Oh, they were both the winner and loser.
Yes, that's right.
Ben, who was the winner and loser?
I think I have a similar one. I think it's the same event. I don't know if anybody saw this, but there was an interview with David Spears on Sky News of a candidate in the upcoming Melbourne state election. Which is just an incredible car wreck of a... can you remember what the name of the bloke is, anybody? Auto Harp, there it is. but I do encourage you to look it up because it is a real masterclass in kind of Clarkendor satire, but for real.
He won't let him off the hook. Spears is magnificent.
Yeah, it's one of those great moments when a journalist... Because I think a lot of the time a politician gives an answer so stupid and empty that a journalist just cannot bring themselves to follow it up. But I don't know what was going on in David's mind at that point, but he really went for it. I'm sorry. He says about three times... I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're trying to say. And it is a magical, magical piece of footage. So I would say winner David Spears, loser, guy whose name I don't know.
Auto-Harp guy. Tommy, winners and losers quickly.
Oh, sorry. The winner, of course, is America. Another glorious Thanksgiving come and gone. In fact, my son is going to high school in America right now. And so he had his very first Thanksgiving there. And his text today was, Jesus, Dad, so much food.
So, is he doing student exchange?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, what fun.
So he's having an exciting time. So, and he saw his first snowfall, to which I love the poetry that I've instilled in him. He said, Dad, it's like white crap coming out of the sky. So I think I've done well.
And the winner, loser, the whatever's left?
The loser is the combine harvester people that can't seem to figure out how to get through my side gate.
To pick up that broken up, hill, your dirt is ready to be taken back home.
Six please bales thank, easy. Six bales easy.
Please thank Ben Jenkins, Jennifer Wong, and Tommy Dean. Thanks for being part of Thank God It's Friday. Next week we have Gene Kitson, Tommy Dean, and Rebecca De Unamuno. Music next week from Cass Eager. Until then, I'm Richard Glover, and thank God it's Friday! Woo!